Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
HQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
Oh, my. Thank you, Mr. Sulu. I love you. And everybody in Atlanta loves you. Good evening and welcome once again to Madam Perry Salon. I am your host and cruise director, Madam Perry, and I'm thrilled to be back here and thrilled to be bringing you once again, the finest in entertainment, the most fascinating people I know. And somehow, I know the most fascinating people. And it amazes even me. By the way, if you're listening live tonight, which is March 28th, on Blog Talk Radio, and you see that pink rectangle that says follow, if you would, please click that and follow here. Or subscribe on iTunes. Subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Because the more subscribers I have, the easier it is for me to get some sponsors and to keep getting more cool guests like the ones I've had lately, the ones I've got coming up, and the one tonight. Lately, who have we had here? Oh, we had Vincent Levy Bryant, a musician from New York who's making a film right now with a couple of guys in Atlanta. And Vincent used to work a lot with the Saturday Night Live band when he was in New York and did some work with Jagger. In fact, we had a guy on the show, Glenn Berger. He's actually a PhD now, psychologist, but he started off in the 70s working with A&R Records, the famous Phil Ramone in New York in the 70s. Started off as just their gopher, lackey, slave, and ended up being a producer. Worked on some of the greatest hits and multi-platinum albums for people like Paul Simon and the Rolling Stones and Bob Dylan and Phoebe Snow and even Bob Fosse, the soundtrack for All That Jazz. And he was one of the, his book is called Never Say No to a Rock Star, because it was the first thing they taught him, and it's about those years. It's a great book. You should check that out if you like music and you like a bit of history. But when he was on, Vince Bryant called in, and they was, because he worked at A&R about the time that Glenn left, and he had his own story about his dad getting him out of bed at 2 in the morning because he had to go down and meet the Rolling Stones somewhere and play keyboards for them. And dad, he goes, "I'm asleep." "No, you get out of bed." Funny stories, fascinating people. Coming soon, I've got, we'll see, tomorrow night is Julian Acosta. He's a Texas rocker whose star is rising fast. They've even got a day, a Julian Acosta day for him in Austin, and he's been named one of the top 10 bands South by Southwest, not once but twice. Also coming soon will be Allison Arngrim. You might know her from Little House on the Prairie. She was a prairie bitch, Little Nellie Olson. Her book is called Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. And Allison Arngrim is a brilliant stand-up comedian. She's an actress right now. If you're in California, she's appearing in Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None at the Judson Theater. And I can't wait to have Allison on. She's a busy woman, very entertaining, and what a story to tell. However, tonight, you know, some of the coolest things have happened have been meeting people like at Crystal Lake Publishing. And thanks to Joe for sending me the most fascinating, scary writers. Yes, they scare the dickens out of me. They make me have to sleep with the light on, but I love them anyway, and tonight's no exception. Tonight's guest it's just called dark fiction. I mean, that's what it is. I've got some bad dreams, but this guy really takes it to another limit. He's the author of Saga of One Trilogy, United States of the Dead, the short story collection. He's in the short story collection these old tales. I think they're all his fresh-cut tales. But he's got something new coming out called Embers, a collection of dark fiction. He lives somewhere in some creaky, scary place up in Pennsylvania, and I'm told he either lives now or once lived in a haunted house, so I hope he didn't bring too many strangers with him. But would you please welcome right here in the genie bottle known as Madame Perry Salon, Kenneth W. Kane. Kenneth, come on in and have a seat.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Get a nice big cushion there.
Nice, nice, yeah. Very colorful.
Thank you, thank you. We had it cleaned out. And I don't know if you know, there's a couple of thriller writers, Rick Cornell and Brett Wright, and they were here recently and left some. They left a burrito in here, so we had to.
A burrito?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice, actually, I was hungry. Haven't had dinner yet, so. That works out fine.
Well, we'll see what we can get for you. I have a drink here. I was watching you today on a show called Drinking with Jason, I believe it's called.
Yeah, yeah. He's a lot of fun. Yeah, great guy.
He seems like a lot of fun. I like Jason. And I was just drinking, getting ready. I have a glass of water with lemon and mint leaves, but these little tiny mint leaves. So just as it was time for me to speak, I swallowed a little mint leaf, but I came through. I came through it. And I don't know where to start with you. You know, this whole bunch of people from Crystal Lake, because you're with Crystal Lake Publishing, am I right?
Yeah, yeah. This is actually my first solo book with them. I've been in a couple of nonfiction pieces of theirs and an anthology, but this is my first collection all by myself. And in the past, I've been with like other small presses and I've self-published, but this is like a really big one for me because I've been trying to get into Joe's Press for a long, long time. And so it feels like a great accomplishment.
Well, Joe's, he has quite a stable of you scary people. And most of them have been on the show here. Several actually have been on the show here. I got Jasper Bark's been here a few times.
Yes, he's quite the show.
Yeah. Who is it?
He's a hard act to follow.
once Veronique Chevalier and I had him in the restraint zone and got that whip going. You know, when just as soon as he was sitting right there where you are, and then all of a sudden there it was.
Hey, you gotta whip him into submission, that guy.
Not too much, because I don't want him to get spoiled. Don't want to spoil him. So, you've got something new coming. I don't know. You know, we like for people to get to know the artists and get to know the authors. And I know you've got a new book, so I'm going to want to talk about your new stuff coming out and then also introduce people to some of your work that's already available. But the new book is called, let's go ahead and get with that because that's fresh. And so some people only listen to the first part of the show if they're, you know, busy or their boss walks up behind them or something and they've got to cut it off. Let's talk about the new stuff. Tell me all about it.
Okay, so Embers is a collection of 25 short stories. They're very lean, hard-hitting, quick stories. They're not related to each other in so much that they have, you know, the same characters throughout or similar towns or stuff like that. But there is a thread that runs through them that's more of an emotional thread. And it's not a constant thread. It's more of a shifting thread. So I like to cast with short stories. When I put together my collections, I like to cast more of a wide net. I want to put out a sample of a little bit of everything out there and try to hook as many readers as I can to my fiction and maybe introduce them into something else that they didn't know they like. And Embers is kind of the embodiment of that. I've really, you know, in the past, I've, you know, not that I haven't done hard work in the past. Every book I do, the best work I can. But this is a big one for me. I mean, obviously getting a really solid publisher behind the book, it's great. And, you know, the fiction tends to be more of the stuff that I was interested in as a child. Not like the blood and gore so much as You know, I grew up watching The Twilight Zone and One Step Beyond and Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And that's the kind of stuff that appeals to me. And so that's the kind of stuff that I tend to write mostly. Now, I do the other stuff sometimes too, but and maybe my stuff is a little bit more on the darker side. But that's I like the twist endings. And, you know, I just always grew up being fascinated with that stuff that could be real. You know, it's just on the edge of reality. And you feel like if you can tear down that wall, you could reach it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just that, right there. What about, I used to watch, I also watched Alfred Hitchcock and I still have Twilight Zone and Outer Limits. I used to watch a show, too, called Tales of the Unexpected. I think they were Roald Dahl stories.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I used to watch so many of those. I used to work third shift. So when I was a kid, I didn't watch them so much. But when I got to be a teenager, I worked third shift a lot. And I, you know, that was all that was on back then. You didn't have cable like you have now where you have 500 channels. You had a few.
Uh-huh.
And they showed a lot of reruns. So you ended up watching PBS a lot. And that was like Twilight Zone Central. And all those shows, they would be like on there in the middle of the night. So it was kind of cool, creepy, you know, got me over a lot of my fears. But watching them in the middle of the night when you should be sleeping was kind of weird.
You mean when you should be sleeping at home or when you were working third shift? Did you keep them up then?
So when I worked at Pepperidge Farm third shift, and I was like summer help during high school. And what that meant was is if they had enough of their regular employees show up, that put me on call. And so I would basically have to stay at home awake waiting for them to call. And they almost always would at some point, you know, call you in, like if the line got busy or something like that. So you go in for like 2 or 3 hours in the middle of the night. But, you know, sometimes you wouldn't go in at all. It was an absolutely bizarre time.
but you got to be kind of awake, though, just in case they call. I mean, they don't want you. You can't be out. Well, I don't know how old you were, but you couldn't be drunk or you couldn't be out whoring around or without being able to unwhore.
Yeah, you know, in those days, I think, like, we did most of our partying, because a lot of my buddies worked there, too, and we partied more during the day, which is, like I said, it was really surreal, because you'd be, like, partying during the day and going out to the movies during the day, and then you'd sleep at night, and then you'd wake up and stay up all night in the middle of the night while everyone else was asleep, waiting to be called into work. So it was a really bizarre time, and, you know, actually, if I didn't, back then is when, so my parents always had this collection of Reader's Digest books and they kept them on this shelf. They always looked so nice. And I just got so bored during those days that I picked one up and, it had an Edgar Allan Poe story in it. And I just fell in love with Edgar Allan Poe. And I think that's really what kind of progressed me into liking dark fiction, like horror, is, reading his stuff and then just wanting to read more of it. So it was a real interesting time. I found Stephen King during that time and Dean Koontz and Clive Barker, you know, some of the masters in the industry and watched a lot of really, really cool, you know, B movie horror flicks back then. So it was neat. I don't want to ever do it again, but it was fun.
So let me ask you then. So when you were, I've got to ask, these graveyard jobs, what the at the cookie What'd you say? Was it Pepperidge Farm cookies? So it wasn't the little tree with the elves. It was Pepperidge Farm that remembers.
Yeah. It was interesting. You know, they make the goldfish.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, the goldfish would come right out of the oven and you had to package them up. So it was a packaging job mostly. They'd come out of the oven, it automatically filled bags and you had to seal the bag. Or you had to run the bag through a sealer. So you were picking up bags as quickly as you can, moving them to a – you know the opening to Laverne and Shirley? Do you remember that? Where they're at the bottling plant? It was literally like that. You're dressed all like that, and you're having to move these bags onto another conveyor belt as quickly as possible to seal them, and then somebody else is putting them in a box, and you have to fold them a certain way to make as many fit as possible. And then there was the cookie part of it, which was – oddly enough, the hardest job in there, and I really appreciate every one of those women that had that job, were just so strong because I could not hack it. The cookie, half of the cookie would come down with chocolate on it, and you had to put the other half on, and you had to do it so quickly, and your back, I mean, I swear I still have back problems today because of that job. You had to do it so fast or they'd get mad at you, and you had to do it perfect. If you didn't do it good, then the cookie would get thrown out by the supervisor, and then, you know, she'd yell at you. So, I mean, it just took a lot of stamina, and the conveyor belts were moving at different speeds. So someone almost always got sick in the shift, and then they'd have to shut the line down for a couple hours. It was really a bizarre time.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That sounds like that Lucy and Ethel thing at the candy factory.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was crazy. And possibly the best part of that job was for one summer I got to work with the guys in the back, the dough guys. They were almost all Vietnam vets, and they had the greatest stories. And, you know, there's probably a wealth of short stories for me there. Some of them were just horrifying. But shoveling dough into the chessmen press, it was just the most – I mean, it's just so odd taking a metal shovel and shoveling dough into this press, and you had to keep it evenly fed, and it just worked like a like one of those Play-Doh factories, and it would just make these – chessmen cookies there. It was a good lot of fun, and you got to eat on your break. You got to eat as many cookies as you want right off the lines. I don't know if they do that anymore, but back then they did. But there's
was
nothing
that,
like getting those cookies fresh.
That, oh gosh, I can imagine. Was that, so did you get to, I mean, it was free to eat the cookies, or did they weigh you on the way out and charge you for the
It was not the best job to have for the weight, you know, because you would have I think they did it to keep you up with a sugar rush, because you were just so jazzed with sugar. You're walking through that plant, you're like, what do you want me to do now? Let me do something, you know. So, I'm sure it was a ploy.
That's brilliant. Hey, listen, this is Madam Perry. If you're listening to me live tonight with author Kenneth W. Kane, oh, gosh, this guy, he's come out the chute swinging, and he's got some great stories. Give us a call, 646-716-9922. That's 646-716-9922. And by the way, Blog Talk Radio assures me that's a toll-free call within the continental U.S. That's such a story. Oh gosh, could you?
Yeah, it was a heck of a place to work, and I'll tell you what, it was very character building, you know, because the interactions you have with people, they're all like you, you know. I mean, no one wanted to talk to each other until you had, like, you know, a good dozen or so cookies in your stomach. And then people are talking the mile a minute.
Oh, God, yeah. It'd be like speed freaks in there.
Yeah.
What about?
And it was so funny.
Did anybody, like develop diabetes or anything?
Well, I have it now. I don't know if it's from that, but I'm sure. I mean, they ended up closing the plant down, like, shortly after I went to, I think it was my second year in college, they shut the plant down, which was a shame because it was a fun place for, you know, I don't know that they have those kind of fun jobs anymore for kids in high school to work in the summers, you know. That was just a fun thing to do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no fun job of now. Now they have all kind of measurements and spreadsheets and junk
like that.
Well, they also decide something to do with frying and getting burned or sweeping up something. And
I had, like, during that time, I had some of the oddest jobs. Like, I don't know if you remember when they found that one of the gas stations was leaking gas into the earth. And I had this job. They had developed this, like, sleeve to go around the gas tanks at every gas station. And I had this job rolling up those sleeves. And it was just 10 of us, 10 people, and they go, 1, 2, 3, go. And you had to roll it as tight as you could and slide it into the sleeve and ship it. And that's all it was for, like, I think I did it a whole summer. just the most bizarre job. You know, they used to, I used to go to a lot of temp agencies, so I get like all these weird jobs.
Oh yeah. I've got a book about temp agency jobs. Actually, it's called Memoirs of a Misanthrope. It isn't printed yet. I'm still waiting for Jasper Bark to write a blurb for it. Maybe since you've got experience with it, maybe I could sweet talk you into one too.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I love that. You know, there's something so special about. I don't know if they do those anymore. The temp agencies. You would get the oddest jobs. And it was just, like, you would get there and you would laugh. Like, I showed up one time at some tire factory, and it was literally, like, 200 degrees in the warehouse. And all they wanted us to do was to take the tires. They would take the tires off the pallet, and we would, disassemble the pallets. And then we'd take all the parts for the pallets to another part of the factory, and we'd reassemble the pallets. And then they'd load it up with tires. And I just never could understand. Yeah, it was such a bizarre job. I was just like, I remember asking them, why don't you guys just carry the pallets to the other side? Just take them over there with the forklift. They're like, no, 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 we disassemble them here. They put them together over there.
I think there was something like that on some show called Malcolm in the Middle or whatever, where there's something that was that stupid, you know? Just
yeah, it was. But that was a bizarre job. I mean, good times, though. You had fun.
Oh yeah, yeah. I had a job for a company, a temp job, a couple of summers ago, actually. It wasn't a kid temp job, but it was for a place that makes the food that goes on the Delta flights and Northwest.
Oh,
okay. They had to hire when Delta and Northwestern merged, and they were hiring a bunch of people. And I was back there with this other temp, and man, she had her own little system going on there. I think she was making money on the side, getting people jobs. She was a temp, too, but I had, you know, I wasn't playing no games. But there were two doors, and one went to the outside, one went to the inside. But that other door, they would knock on it, you know, I know you in there. And you open the door, and it would be an entire family in native dress from some costume, from some country, I mean. It was just amazing. People would come in, and they'd hear that there was a job. And it felt the best. Look, I don't know. I can give you this. I can get you the thing. They were going to come in and show me how they could work. And look, I'm just a stranger here myself, okay?
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Of course, my heart, I felt for them because I knew they needed a job. And then, on the other hand, there was, I don't think they'll ever hear this. I mean, and the girl told me, the other temp, she would say, sometimes I come in and listen to all the messages just to laugh at them. And these would be things like people calling in complaints for harassment or stuff. And, like, it'd be somebody going, okay, like, I work on the second shift and I want to report sexual harassment. And I said, you didn't tell somebody about this? She goes, no, listen. And it was like, okay, you know, I'm dating Cliff, and Cliff and I have been dating a long time, and we have a baby. But I caught Cliff on break with Sandra in his car, screwing. And
holy
so I just
cow.
And so to her, that was sexual harassment that somebody else was screwing her boyfriend on the same shift during break. So, like,
There was definitely stuff like that at Pepperidge Farm, too. I mean, because it was literally a very tight-knit group. And a lot of things that happened there, I could say that they would not go over today. You know what I mean? It just would not. People would be fired in mass. They'd just, like, line us up and fire us. You know, all 20 out. So, yeah. Yeah. I know how that goes.
you know, at least I think I'm always grateful that no matter what kind of bizarre stuff like there, I can always pull back and see it, you know, from my camera. So somebody's watching me that nobody there sees that's getting a laugh at it. You know, I picture somebody like you at home watching it on TV, like it's a reality thing.
yeah. Yeah, like that.
You gotta
that,
see what
that,
happens next.
Yeah, like that show with the boss, where the undercover boss or whatever it is. It's just, I mean, you see they put on this, like, fake wig, and you're like, oh, come on, you can't tell it's a fake wig.
Honestly, so. When I see a rug like that, I think it's one that, they used to be the Moonies at the airport would put those rugs on their heads so people would think, you know, they were just a hippie or something. Well, this was back in the day, back in the 70s.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that, actually. I grew up in Chicago, and I remember seeing that.
These people are just crazy out there. You know, I might, if I might at some point, I might play a song tonight by my friend Daryl Rhodes. He's a stand-up comic. He's also a musician, but he's a stand-up comic. He's on the road right now, but it's called She's a Mortician's Dream, and I might play that for, because he comes on here and he calls in a lot. But I think
that sounds cool. Yeah, that sounds like a great song.
That's a lovely little tune. I might send him a message over there and ask him, is it okay to call him? But, yeah, you think so? I do, too. Okay. Anyway, so I kind of got doubled up there. I think we do have, if you wanted to call in and talk to Kenneth W. Kane, 646-716-9922. And let me see, I do think we have a call. Hi, this is Madam Perry. You're here. Do you have something to say to Kenneth W. Kane? This is definitely. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.
I thought that was awesome. I like that kind of stuff.
Okay, good. And let's see.
I think that was the twins from The Shining.
Yes. The little demon girl song. And I think we have a craft room over here. We've been I was trying to teach the Corgis how to make take pipe cleaners and make IUDs, so that when the Planned Parenthood goes under, we can still have some kind of a revenue stream over here too.
Nice. I'm just picturing that now.
Gotta watch out for that glitter. Let me see.
That's rough.
Hey, times are tough, but you know, like they said, listen, I don't know what your political leanings are, so I don't want to offend you, but I forgot what I was going to say.
I'm a none of the above guy, so you can't offend me.
Okay. Hey, you know, see, people learn to do things. People get a little... They get a little slack, they get a little lazy, and then when they get inconvenienced, they learn to do stuff like that. So they'll learn how to build a bunker and make their own intrauterine device or whatever.
Yeah.
Always a good side to
that. That's how you survive the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, that's my plan right now.
You can trade those for food when the time comes.
I may do that. You know that's a good. That sounds like some kind of Errol Barrow book. Have you ever heard of her? Errol Barrow, she writes these dystopian things.
No.
Yeah,
no, I haven't. I'll have to look it up.
Let's see. I'm going to see if I can get Becky Kyle slacking out there to join us here. Becky Kyle, do you know her? She's up in Tennessee. She's not doing anything useful tonight. Becky, call us. We're telling jobs. I'm here with Kenneth W. Kane, having the time of my life, and we're talking about sexual harassment at temp jobs that we've had. So if you have any aspiring or any ambitious attorneys out there or law school students that want to help us out, what is the weirdest temp job you ever had besides the...
Let's see. I've had so many odd ones. It's just bizarre. One year I was packaging software. There was that one that I told you about, the wrapping. That was really just a bizarre one. The tire moving one, the wrapping. I mean, we would be in that 200-degree warehouse, and when we took breaks, the only place that was cool was down inside the tractor tires. So we would climb up this stack of like 10 tractor tires and then go all the way down. That was the only cool spot in the entire place. So that was probably the weirdest one. I just thought it was a weird job that they were paying all of us to take those apart. And then we didn't even have to move them. They moved them for us. And then we had to put them together. And they were really easy to take apart, really easy to put together. That was probably the weirdest one. Either that or the rolling the sleeves for the gas one. I had another one where I had to clean up dog poop for a while. That was a weird one.
Oh, your own dog or someone else's?
No, it was other people. It was like a one of these places where you kennel your, well, like a kennel, but it was like more of a private kennel. And
was it a kennel or was it like a kennel, like your neighbor that has too many that's been hoarding dogs or something?
Yeah, it was like a high price kennel. And they kept all the animals kind of like a zoo. And so you had to go and clean all the, you know, they had like little environments and you had to go clean all the environments and everything. And that was kind of an odd thing. So it was just literally taking a scoop and just going around. I don't know. I had so many weird jobs, but that pretty much embodies all of them. You know, that was my temping agency years right there. I've had other weird experiences at jobs, but those are more like serious jobs that, you know, like life forming jobs where you have like bosses that are just, you know, and I'm not saying this about all my bosses. So if anyone's listening out there, I don't hate all of you, but just a couple of weird bosses that just have weird philosophies on life.
But you hate enough of them though, don't you? You know, you do.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you what, I had this boss once. He told me that he called me into his office and he goes, I need you to stop doing so much work. I was like, what? He goes, well, you're doing more work than the other people that work under you. And that makes them look bad. And I can't give them a good review if they can't keep up with you in work. So he goes, I need you to cut back a little bit. So I just thought it was a ridiculous thing. So I said, you know what? I'm not going to do any work. And for like a month, I did absolutely nothing at that job. I'm not even lying about that. I'm being totally serious. I did nothing. He called me in his office. I literally sat there and watched videos. Yeah. He called me into his office and he goes, I just want to let you know how much better you're doing at work. I was like, you got to be kidding. He gave me a raise.
That's the job I wanted. That's my dream job. Doing too much.
I just think he was crazy, so maybe that has something to do with it.
Oh, wow, and you left that place? How could you?
Oh, yeah. My dad was sick at the time, and one of us was going to have to leave our job to take care of the kids. My dad, when I was young, he was always away on business trips. Like, he was, you know, it was a different time period back then because you didn't have the dual-income families as much. And he'd be gone like 3-4 weeks, and then he'd come back for 3 days, and he'd sleep the entire 3 days, and then he'd go away. And I always had it in me that I was going to, you know, spend more time with my kids. And so when the opportunity came up, my wife loves her job. She didn't want to leave, and I said, you know what? That's fine with me. I'll spend some time with my family, and that was my priority. So it worked out well.
Okay. Man, I wish, well, that was certainly a blessing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's not always easy, but you know how that goes. When you have to do something, you have to do it, and that's just the way it is.
Yes, I do understand. Well, let's talk about your book. Let's talk about Ember.
Okay. Yeah,
everyone's falling in love with you. Oh! I know what's in that universe. Do you like British humor?
I do. Oh my God, I'm a huge Monty Python fan, and it's not really British humor, but it's kind of along the same way. But the Kids in the Hall, I know they were from Canada.
Kids in the Hall. Yeah.
So funny, but yeah, I'm a huge Monty Python fan. So yeah, we
I do a lot of
references to. I don't know that I have. I haven't watched any of that stuff for a long, long time. You know, nowadays you have cable and it's like 500 channels.
Yay.
But back in the day, you had Monty Python and that was like it. And I did watch, I used to watch, what was it called? The Two Daves. It was like two guys named Dave.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And then there was another one I used to watch that was, he was a priest, a Catholic priest. That would drink whiskey
Father
and
Ted.
Smoke.
Father Ted.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I used to watch all those a lot. And it's, you know what? I've said that a million times and no one's ever got it. I can't believe you got it.
Father Ted, are you kidding? That was brilliant. And Mrs. The lady that took care of them, Mrs. Took a nice cup of tea with some cookies. Or did they have cocaine in them?
I think it was ahead of its time. I think nowadays that would kill. I mean, they should really consider rebooting that sort of thing. All those shows were so great back then. I mean,
I was thinking of one called The IT Crowd.
I haven't seen that.
It was in the early aughts, I believe. But it had Richard Iowati, Chris O'Dowd, and they were IT guys. And there's one, you know, Chris O'Dowd, he was the Irish actor. And he just hangs out on the screen. His boss is telling him, you know, that he should get out and meet other people. He goes, I don't like people. He's going, oh, but you haven't met them all. He goes, I've met enough of them. He goes, sits down, and he goes, people, what a bunch of bastards.
Yeah, that is, that's exactly how it was, too. I mean, I did used to watch another one I used to watch was Fawlty Towers. That was
yeah.
a classic. There was one other
they
one.
Try to bring them to the States, they ruin them, you know?
Yeah. Well, except for one, have you ever seen Wilford?
Wilford? I don't think so.
Yeah, that is one that was in. So I'm trying to think who the guy was. Well, actually, The Office was an English one. They did a good job at porting that one over. I mean, the source material is still really good. But Wilfred actually brought the guy who played this dog. It's a funny show. It's about a guy who – I just said it's a funny show, and this is going to come off weird. It's a funny show. It's about this guy who tries to kill himself. And he wakes up, and this dog is a man dog. It's like a man in a dog suit.
Okay.
And it's absolutely hilarious. They ported that over to the United States. And, again, the original, the source material is really funny. But I think they did really good. They had the guy that played Frodo in the Lord of the Rings. I forget his name.
Frodo.
Yeah,
Frodo.
The guy who played
Frodo.
Frodo.
We know who
yeah. He's the main guy, and it's just a really over-the-top, like very, you know, sexually oriented, lots of, you know, cursing and stuff like that. It's a really funny show. It just didn't do well in the States for some reason. The first couple seasons did, but then it fell off. You know, it's like we can't appreciate British humor over here or something, I guess.
They try to turn it around into something more like, oh, well, this will offend somebody or whatever, you know, but
Yeah,
and they just kind of like take all the fun, all the starch out of it. So
they suck all the energy out of it.
Just suck it right out. Just like it's like they just took a yeah, just buzz sawed it all out. There's a guy named Danny Gillen. He lives in Glasgow. He's a musician and a writer, and he's got one book called Will You Love Me Still Love Me Tomorrow, and it's about a musician who's going through all this, you know, worked so hard and all these years he's worked trying to go someplace and try to get a record deal and subbing his stuff and you know going with one, and he finally just gives up and he's going to commit suicide before his wife comes home. And then, just as he's, you know, taking all these pills, and this is how it opens, he's fading out. Then he hears this music on the radio about this, you know, great new band signed, and it's him, you know, but he can't. And he's trying to find something to get it, because his wife won't be home for a while, and he's trying to find some way to bring himself back, you know, from the brink.
It's so wrong to laugh at that, but it is funny. I mean... You gotta laugh.
gotta, you know. Not like you did it to him. So, okay.
Yeah.
Let's get back to the main event, which is.
Okay. Yeah, Embers comes out this Friday, Julius told me. So I've just looked over just this morning the final proof, so it should be on track. And it's like I said, it's 25 short stories. More like not so horrific as like Blood and Guts, but I like the twist ending. And I think that people are going to enjoy this one. I think this is going to be the one that people like the most out of all my work.
Okay, why?
Well, you know, when you start out, like anything, when any profession you start out, you're going to have your bumps and your bruises. And I've left all mine out there for everybody to see. If they read, like, some of my very early work, they'll probably be like, what the hell?
For everybody? Wait, well, hold one second, if you would. We got somebody coming in Madam Perry's salon here. And they might get stuck in the beaded curtain. Hold on just a second. Hi, welcome to Madam Perry's salon. This is Madam Perry with Kenneth W. Kane. Who's here? Yeah. Hello.
Julian. Hi, hey, this is Julian Acosta.
Julian Acosta?
Yes, ma'am.
Are you somebody? Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You've got your own day in Texas. Hey, this is me, and this is Kenneth W. Kane, horror author, in here with me. And we've got somebody else coming in here. So if you hold on just a second, Julian. Hi, welcome to Madam Perry Salon. I'm here with Kenneth Kane and Julian Acosta. And who do I have here?
Hi, nice to meet you, Julian.
Hey, pleasure to meet you, sir. The pleasure is all mine. Madam Perry, thank you.
Oh, no, hold on a second, because we mentioned you earlier. Who's the 404 person I got here?
Oh, that's me, Vince Bryan.
Hey! Bryan who? Bryan who?
Vince Bryan.
I talked about you earlier, too. Okay, Julian Acosta, rocker from Texas. I was talking about you earlier. You've got your own. You're going to be here tomorrow night live. Everybody, Kenneth, Vincent, I want you back here tomorrow night when Julian Acosta is going to be here. This man, if you haven't heard of him, you better be checking him out because his star is on the rise with not even just a bullet. It is. Julian, you got your own day there in Texas. I got a Julian Acosta day. It's what, June 18th?
And
I want my own day.
Yeah. Oh
yeah.
Man, that's it's a beautiful thing. It's a lot of honor to be given something like that. And, you know, it's always great to have, you know, someone shine a little light, especially when it's the local government and the relationship that I've been able to have with Mr. Adler, Steve Adler, is our mayor. It's just beautiful. And, you know, that's one of the greatest rewards is when you successfully talk to people and connect with people on a real level instead of, you know, the pretend to connect or the attempt to or the try. I'm sure y'all all know exactly what I'm talking about.
Totally agree.
You know,
that's one of the reasons we wanted you on the show so badly. I was talking earlier at the beginning when I had Glenn Berger on, who wrote a book, I'll Never Say No to a Rock Star, about his days in the 70s working at A&R Records with Phil Ramone, as a producer with, you know, Paul Simon, Phoebe Snow, Frank Sinatra, Bob Dylan, Rolling Stones and stuff. And Vince here was playing with, worked with them back then too with A&R, and also did a lot of work with the Saturday Night Live band and the Stones. And so, yeah,
that's awesome.
I don't know where I was
that's
going
awesome.
With, but yeah, but we're,
back,
we
back
see,
in the New York days, back in the early
in
80s.
New York, but he's in Atlanta now, but yeah, and you've been, voted one of the best top 10 bands in South by Southwest. 2 years and two twice.
Wow. Congratulations.
So he'll be here tomorrow night.
Yeah, congratulations.
He'll be here tomorrow night. You'll be back. Bring your friends with you. And I don't know if you know, Kenneth Kane is a horror writer. And he writes very, very dark stuff here. Very scary stuff. If you guys like horror.
Hey, you know, the dark stuff has to be given. The dark stuff has to be told.
I'm a rocker too, so but I'm more of a closet rocker. I don't play my guitar out in public anymore. So
a closet rocker. Well, I don't know if you heard, but at the beginning of the show, we were talking about bizarre temp jobs that we've had, like him working at the Pepperidge Farm place and the old Vietnam vets that would had great stories for me that worked pushing the dough into the chest, cookies and all the stuff. And he's in about, and also you got to eat all the cookies you want. But I asked him, did they weigh you when you were leaving and take that out of your paycheck? You know.
That's funny.
No, I think secretly they deducted all the money.
I'm sure. Either that, or just wanted to use you as a disposal, you know.
Or the payment was going to the gym, and that, you know, the pain to get it all out was that's the payment in its own too.
But just before
they were giving
us
they were giving us all the cookies without chocolate, I think.
Oh no, that's
all the bad cookies.
Oh man.
Well, so funny. What was it you said that you felt like it was kind of a trick to get you guys to work faster, get you on a sugar rush?
Yeah, oh yeah. Because, you know, you go in and you'd be like, it was graveyard shift, so you go in and be like, just like that commercial for the donuts, time to make the cookies. But then you'd be like, I love making these cookies. Like, making these cookies? I like making cookies. I love it. I think it was a secret ploy to get you to work harder. Have more cookies.
and then if there was any kind of a problem with the cookie factory, you could just use some of the same ingredients and make meth or something. But see, the thing is, you've always got to have a revenue stream, you know.
No, I'm writing that down because that's a great story idea.
This is the best conversation I've had all day.
Who said that? Was that Julian?
That was me. Yes, ma'am. Oh my God. Making
so Julian,
my
you
day.
Tell,
thank you.
Are you going to tell your friends to call to listen tomorrow night and call in that.
Absolutely. I'm in the process of doing that now. I'm a little scared, see, because I got some friends that every now and then like to pull out pranks, and
like to do what?
They like to pull out pranks and get on and ask funny questions to put me on the spot. And
put you on the spot, yeah, right.
You know, I call them bittersweet accountability buddies.
Wow. Say that again. I think Kenneth, I think I've got you one of your next stories, your next short story.
Yeah. I think everybody has those, the ones that want to put you on the spot, make you feel uncomfortable, and then you go, oh. It's that. The best way to handle it is to come forward straightforward and make up a story.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, the thing is, I have a hard time fabricating stuff because I put in honesty as one of my values, so where honesty gets me in trouble sometimes. So then I'll be like, Ben, is that you? You son of a gun. What are you doing, buddy? And I'll just turn it. I'll flip Robert right back. And they'll be like, okay, cool, that was fun. All right, thanks, Ben, for calling in.
Just turn the tables on them.
Oh, you got to, like a DJ.
I'll put them down,
right.
They'll hear this. Yeah, something like that. I'll put them in the quiet room, you know, just a little.
You do it like a gong show.
Yeah, totally.
Need a gong.
I'll have them walk the dogs for me, okay? Just something like that.
Oh. Wow.
I told Kenneth I was trying to train my dogs, because I've been watching all these things about people training dogs to help veterans, which I think is good because it's a very underserved community, and these dogs have such talent, so they can work for a wounded warrior or someone who's handicapped. And I'm trying to practice by teaching mine how to use pipe cleaners to make IUDs so that when Planned Parenthood is completely defunded, well, they'll have their own revenue streams when they start wanting the fancier treats. I'm sorry, was it something I said? Something?
Wow. I'm trying to make one of my dogs a therapy dog, too. So I've been working really hard with this dog over the years to make him a therapy dog. Only problem is, he's a little bit too much werewolf. So he tends to eat all the people that he works with.
Okay. I have a really good story about a dog. And,
that's a horror
story.
That's a horror story. I'm sorry. From the producers of Cujo. comes a new brand of horror. Service dog.
Hey, wait a minute. I need this guy to do my trailers.
Okay, wait. Hold on a second. I got to get somebody to calm down a minute. Okay. Nope. All right. What was that story again?
Well, I have a personal story with dogs, with my dog, Archipolio, where I almost...
Oh, that's nice. That's
here.
Nice. Okay, anybody else? Oh, go ahead. You're going to tell a story.
Wait, what's his name? Archipolio?
His name is Archie, but I call him Archipolio because he's super animated, and he's just this dog. He's just, I mean, if you look at him, he's just got nothing but love for you, and he's just like, hey, how's it going? What's up? My name is Archie. Kind of thing. And I was in the process of getting him the vest and getting him approved to where I could take him anywhere just because, you know, that's my little guy and I don't think it's fair. And then I took him out to the ranch where my parents live in the hill. I don't know if anyone's familiar with the hill country of Texas, but it's a beautiful place. And then aside from that, you know, he stayed out there and my mom fell in love with him. And by the time I was like, hey, I'm ready for Archipolio to come back, they were like, well, sorry, buddy. We love him too much. And then I found out that he really loved it out there. And there were two epiphany moments. One was I come home. I finished this gig that I did, and I had to be there at my parents' house at 3 in the morning after driving after a gig to only get into a car to drive another 14 hours to a family reunion. But I get there, and I'm like, all right, everybody, I know you've been waiting for me, but there's one thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to sit there and I'm going to hang out with Archie for at least 5 minutes. And I sit there and I'm calling for him. And it's 3 in the morning. He comes up and he's soaking wet. And I'm just like, you're just living the life out here, aren't you, buddy? 3 in the morning, covered in mud, you're all wet. And how do you take a dog away from that? How do you do that?
Yeah.
You know?
And yeah. What was the dog's name, Julian?
Archie, but I call him Archipolio.
Archie, so if you're out there at 3 a.m. and he's coming in wet, you know, ain't no party like an Archipolio party.
That's right.
No, don't stop.
The guy.
Yeah, where is that dog going? That dog's having a life.
That's where we're doing the next show.
Yeah, he's. You know, we need to have his own. Archie needs his own sitcom. I swear, he really would. He sits
there
and
goes,
he'll
give
take
it to
a rock.
Me. Give it to me
he'll
and Kenneth, okay?
Uh-huh,
and then
uh-huh,
Vincent will
uh-huh
do the music. You and Vincent can do the music for it.
I'd love
oh
to do
man
the music. I would love to do the music. I'd love
Vincent's
to do Archie's
film
voice.
Now.
I think Archipolio should have a special voice, you know. Yeah, one of those.
That sounds,
you know,
like a sounds like a classical song, or like a
yeah
or like a mode for soloing on guitar. Archipolio.
Archipolio.
Mode.
Yeah,
would it be
yeah
like?
Yeah.
Would it be like Norm MacDonald or more like?
Yeah, Norm MacDonald. He should be more.
Yeah.
He should be. Always correct, logical, subdued, and just superior to everyone.
I can dig it.
To
everyone. I can dig it. Now, let me ask you this.
Everyone.
Well, I've got you. I know. Well, I've got you here. Well, you guys, I want Kenneth W. Kane to tell us about his newest book, which is I think it comes out this month, called Embers, A Collection of Dark Fiction. And I want each of us to go tell 20 people about it. Kenneth, go.
Okay, it's a collection of 25 short stories. They're mostly like Twilight Zone, One Step Beyond stories of like they were when I was a kid, where they had a little bit of a twist to them. That's mostly what it's about. It's just it's horror. I could call it dark fiction because I have trouble saying horror. Everybody always goes, "Who are you talking about?" But it is. I think I'm talking about something. Because I always had trouble with my R's and W's as a kid. So I always call it dark fiction. But I like that twist. I like where you're reading a story. You don't always know what's going on unless you're paying attention to the subtext of a story. You know, the clues.
Right.
Almost like, you talk about music. Music is the same way. There's a subtext to every song. If you listen to the subtext of the song, you get the
totally
gist of what the artist is really trying to tell you.
Totally.
And that's how my collection works. And if you follow that subtext through the different stories, you'll see how they're related in one way or another.
Sounds juicy. Sounds like a good read, and I will tell 20 people about it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Wherever you are on Facebook or wherever on social media, share that with me, someone, Jennifer.
I'll share make sure you are all friends together. All my people in Madame Perry's salon, all of you.
Thank you. I'm glad.
Guys, awesome. Let me ask you this. I've got Kenneth W. Kane here, Julian Acosta, Vince Levy Bright. I've got people like Sandra Beckham out there listening and other people that are sending messages. And I got to tell you, am I the luckiest girl or what? I am very honored by your time.
Wow.
Wow.
Totally.
It's the other way around for me. I don't know about you gentlemen, but.
Yeah.
So
nobody's more lucky than me, though, because somebody left that burrito there for me. So.
Oh,
wow. I'm hungry.
Thanks for letting the tummy roll now, man.
Hey, I got to tell you something. I don't want to pick on you, Julian, because you're going to be here tomorrow night, and we're going to all be back tomorrow night to listen to Julian, and we're going to play some of his music. But Julian and I had some kind of a miscommunication when we booked him on an earlier show, and I don't know how I messed him up, but I wanted to say, Julian, you've got, and I'm not fussing, but you must be a little bit psychic, because there is one particular public relations firm, and they send me a lot of people to put on the show. And finally one day, they said something about, oh, we found out that our client wasn't Mr. Show last night. And I said, yeah. They said, why don't you call us? I said, I got to tell you, every time you send me somebody, they're wonderful. However, not to say they're not wonderful, but every time you send me a psychic, they always miss the first show. They completely forget about it.
I feel so bad about it, and I looked at it, and then South by Southwest came around the corner, and I was already knee deep in South by a week before South by, and sometimes you get punched in the face, and all you can do is apologize, and I'm so sorry.
I didn't mean it to fuzz at you, and I was so glad that you called me the other day, but the thing is, I said, I don't know why, because one guy, Luis Monero, because I remember he's like head of some world organization about having out-of-body experiences, and I was all psyched to prep to promote the show, and I kept thinking, what do I do to get people to listen to it? So I said, hey, can't afford a vacation, but sick of having a staycation? Listen to Luis Monero and learn how to have an out-of-body vacation. But and he did come, and he was a lot of fun. He really was.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's on point. There's some words. Those are words right there. Those are some truth words. Those are truth.
It sounds like an advertisement from the future. That's what's going to be happening. Out-of-body experiences. Jack, you write into Google and take you somewhere. Wow, that's a thought.
Think about it like this. How cool is it? I mean, think about, you know, Julian, you're a little younger than the rest of us. To think that we could have something like this show where, or social media and the internet where I meet people from around the world that come, where we all meet up here on the show and different places on social media and have little hangouts and stuff. Who would have ever thought that that would be possible in the world?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
You grew up with it pretty much, Julian, but for the rest of us, this is still.
Oh, I was just telling the story the other day about how you remember the first like video games were like Pong, and you would pay $300 for this console and move this little line up and down, hitting a ball back and forth. And that was our video game, and I'm sitting there watching my kids play like real life stuff.
Yeah.
What happened? Where did it come from?
Yeah, you're telling me.
I'm pretty sure I'm living in a dream.
Where is here? I've got Julian, where are you? You're in Texas. Kenneth, you're in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, yes.
Wow. And Vincent, you're here with me. And, of course, our beloved writer, Robert Leland Taylor, he's the one that first told the public that Madame Perry salon was the inside of Jeannie's bottle. So I'm here in the Jeannie bottle, and, you know, that we get a,
yep.
It's a swinging, groovy world.
Yep, somewhere in Atlanta.
I am in
well,
Austin.
You want to hear about my? You want to hear about my Jennifer Garner experience?
I do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm in Buckhead in Starbucks this morning, so I'm doing my usual walk up to my favorite Starbucks, Barnes and Noble, Publix, you know. Anyway, and she's walking towards, you know, these two, you know, I'm a very large black man, you know. I know I don't sound like it, but you know, my mother trained me this way so people would feel more, you know. Anyway, so I'm walking up to this door. And I see her walking up. She's got on the dark shades. And I go, that is Jennifer Garner. And we slow down. We make it to the door. And I say to her straight up, I go, wow, let me get the door. And she goes, oh, okay, okay. And she goes, and I go, yeah. I said, yeah, you just look, it's your sister. You look like your sister, right? She goes, yeah, it's my sister. I said, well, your sister did a very, very good job in Alias. And she goes, oh, thank you. I said, she started laughing. We started laughing. No, really. Like, and so, like, now I'm, like, trying, I'm like, Vince, you're talking to Jennifer Garner in front of a bunch of people in Starbucks. So now we're going down the line. We go down the line, her friend, her assistant or whatever. And then we just ended up chatting. And then they walk into Barnes & Noble. And, I mean, we talked about, you know, I told her what I do. And she goes, oh, yeah, industry, and you're in Atlanta, and this is perfect. And, you know, and she told me where they were staying at. And I said, you know, it's the third time I've run into a celebrity here. She says, well, they always put us up in blah, blah, blah around the corner. So anyway, so now I'm like, she leaves. Her assistant, they trail off into the Barnes & Noble, and I open up my books and turn around. It's like E.F. Hutton. Everyone is staring at me. And I'm like,
man.
And Bob, I got to get his name right. I see him. I've known him for 6 months. He looks at me and says, she ain't so hot in person.
Oh.
Wait. And then his buddy next to him
shade.
Goes, his buddy next to him goes, oh, bullshit, yes, she is, excuse me. He goes, yes, she is, and now it erupts into, that was her. You were talking to her, do you know her? You must know her. No, I don't know her. Bob was like, yeah, he knows her. They were talking like they know each other. I was like, only in Atlanta. New York, would care. In Atlanta, they would care and interact. In Savannah, they would invite you over to drink, get drunk, fall down, and never talk about you. You know, so it's just, you know, anyway.
I want to go to Atlanta.
It was fun. It was fun.
You should come to Atlanta. Julian, you've got to come to Atlanta.
That's
actually an interesting story
Atlanta?
Because
Atlanta is a very interactive together. You should come.
I've been
to Atlanta.
Florida.
Okay, well, if you've been to Florida, it's like Atlanta's like a mixture of L.A., Florida, and maybe New Jersey. I don't know, something like that.
Florida's like Atlanta Junior.
Yeah, Florida's like New York Junior.
I'd love to go
to
Texas.
With better water,
tell my wife
and better
I'm like,
sun, and better food. And
you tell my wife,
know,
I'm like,
man,
we got to get out.
Texas is
eat the world.
Food, man.
Better food.
You guys want to talk about good food? That's Chicago. Chicago has the best food I've ever had.
You know, man, I got a story that I want to share with Chicago. So check this out about Chicago.
All right.
So I was 7 in the morning the Sunday after the first weekend of Austin City Limits, which is a big music festival up here. And I'm pretty intoxicated with my friends, and we all decided that it would be great to take a trip last minute. And I'm like, guys, y'all better pony up. And they're like, yeah, we got it. So I'm like super excited because I'm like, impromptu trip where we're gonna go. There's in between Chicago, New York, Florida, and then Iceland was in the mix, and Alaska. Chicago wins. I'm typing it in. I buy my plane ticket, and I look around, and all my buddies are passed out. And I'm sitting there going, like, guys. I'm slapping my friend Matt in the face going, dude, wake up, man, wake up. Like I bought the tickets, your turn. And he's out cold. And so I'm like, okay, I came to terms with it. And I said, well, I need to go to the airport because the flight leaves in like about an hour. And so I wake up sober in Denver And I'm like, coming to, and I'm like, oh, I got a ticket to go to Chicago. And I'm like, all right, cool. I get to Chicago. I had luckily had a friend there, and they were really accommodating. The first night, correct me if I'm saying this wrong, but it was Lou Minotti. Is that what it is?
Yeah, Illuminati, yeah.
Man, that pizza put
insane
me in a coma,
pizza.
Man.
Yeah.
Wow.
I miss
wow.
that. I mean, I have a ritual whenever I go back to see my family. I need White Castle because we don't have White Castle around here anymore. I need White Castle. I need Portillo's for Chicago hot dogs. If you haven't had Chicago-style hot dogs, you're missing out because Chicago-style hot dogs are the best.
Kenneth
grew
up in Chicago, didn't you, Kenneth?
Yeah, I love it. And the Illuminati.
You grew up there,
right? I mean, yes, until I was like 12. I was actually just telling a story because it's so odd because living in Pennsylvania is a totally different experience than Chicago. When I was in Chicago, I mean, granted, this is back in the 70s, our grade school, the principal had created a boxing ring in one of the classrooms. And whenever you got in a fight with someone, you put on these, like, 16-ounce gloves, and you go and you duke it out. You know, you might throw, like, 5 or 6 punches because they were so heavy, and you're, like, this little scrawny kid.
Yeah, you were a kid.
but you were always going in there to fight because it was so much fun. How would that go over today? In today's society, how would that go over?
No, that's what these kids need.
Every woman has to get a prize.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
everyone with... Oh, you get the prize for the bloodiest nose. How's that? Okay. Cut it down. Thank you. No, you don't get paid.
It was such a cool thing. I'm not even going to lie. I know that one of my buddies from Chicago might be listening. He was traumatized by it. He did not like it. I loved it. I thought it was great. I was getting fights every day.
What's his name? We'll holler at him. What's his name?
I shouldn't say.
Okay, the guy with the bloody nose, Kenneth Payne, is still thinking about it. So
I'm thinking about it, but I shouldn't say so.
I'm going to see you guys. You guys have fun. I'll see you tomorrow night. I have to run right back into the studio. I was so glad to get on your show with you, Jennifer, and your guests. Thank you, and looking forward to it. Please send the links to me.
I will.
Thanks.
We love
Thanks
you.
For stopping by.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Likewise.
Bye-bye.
Hey,
drop
back by tomorrow when Julian's here. You too, Kenneth. Now, Kenneth, let me ask you a question. What grade were you in with that boxing thing?
Oh, so that was probably kindergarten when it started, and I think it lasted until second grade. So it was about a 3-year stretch. And I know, like, a lot of the kids that had it, they were – you know what I did, and this is what they may not realize. I was heavily bullied as a kid, and what it allowed me was a fair chance in the ring because I was small and scrawny. I mean, nothing compared to what I am. Nowadays, people, if I tell them I'm small and scrawny, they'd be like, no way. But I was small and scrawny back then, and it allowed me a fair chance. I could move quick in a ring, and I could get in 2 or 3 punches, and all they could do is get in 2 or 3 punches too. And it was supervised, so it allowed me a place to address my bullies in a good way. Nowadays, I'm not so sure kids have that. I mean, it's not a physical thing anymore.
No.
In Chicago, very physical. Nowadays, it's more of a mental thing. So.
Yeah, I got two thoughts. I got two things on that. First of all, I wondered how many kids would purposely fail a grade just to stay in that fighting ring. And two, April 5th, Allison Armgren's going to be on the show. I don't know if you know who she is, Julian. We were talking about her earlier. She was Nellie Olson on Little House on the Prairie, the little prairie bitch. That's her book. Okay, she's a stand-up comedian. Right now she's doing an Agatha Christie play at the Judson Theater in California. So she does still do a lot of acting and performing and all this. But I think in her book she does talk about how, and I've heard her on interviews say this, because as a little girl, you know, when she was still going to do that, and her parents were both in show business. I think her mom did the voice of, you know, Bullwinkle and stuff like that, and Gumby. But she was being sexually abused by her older brother at the time. And, you know, ooh, wow, there's kind of things she says, I don't know if my parents understood or didn't understand. It was nobody who seemed to be able to grasp and understand what's going on. But she said the thing is, though, by being now, of course, Michael Landon had a tight set. She says, we always said, little house in the prairie, no scandal, no arrest, no convictions. You know, he ran a tight set. The kids all had to be accountable for their work like adults. But she said, having all that stuff to throw, because Nellie was always throwing a tantrum or something, she said it really helped me work a lot of it out of my system when I would go in and I was just about to burst because nobody seemed to be able to grasp or to help me. I didn't know what to do. But every time, you know, Nellie had to throw a dish or something, she said, it actually helped me. So, hey, you never know who these things could
be. You know, on the converse of that, kids now, I talk about kids having it harder nowadays because it's more of a mental bullying. They have a lot more outlets to go to and that kind of thing. And I'll say this now, if anyone's ever having that kind of problem, they see me, feel free to come to me. I will definitely make sure somebody gets to the right place because I don't like that kind of stuff.
Man, so, amen to that. Amen to that. I can stand testament to all that. And I hate to interrupt. I'm so sorry. But
No, absolutely.
On the topic of bullying and the brass tacks, bullies are just ignorant cowards, man. And I think
hey,
the cowards, man, because it's a lot of it that some people don't know better, and then so, you know, that's the ignorance and the cowardice is like, you know, because you try to pick on someone your own size. And it's funny how the mental thing is going these days, and you know, I think adults bully each other just as much sometimes mentally, especially nowadays.
Yeah.
And I stand testament. I moved into this country as an immigrant, and you know, I don't hold anything about it. I just didn't know, man. No one told me that, hey, you're moving to a different country. I moved to the United States not knowing any English, and all the kids looked at me weird and would say stuff, and they're like, man, this guy's dressed weird because, you know, I was from a whole different place, and I was living in a place that no one understood. So, like, you know, now I think it's very interesting how now the avocado, the taco, and all that stuff is praised. But I remember going to school as a kid and being made fun of because I would have my mom make me tacos, and that would be like my snack or my lunch. And I just think that's just one of the craziest thoughts where it's like, man, at one point, people were giving me all sorts of shit because I was into a mango, and now mango is one of like the most popular flavors in the United States, man.
Yeah.
And now everyone's like,
they got their own alcohol.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, you don't like avocados? You're weird. And I'm like, dude, I've been eating avocados since I was a baby, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the thing. I think that the bullying when we were kids, especially us. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but for us, it kind of helped toughen us up. And the bullying nowadays isn't the physical sort. Like the physical sort, you can deal with.
Yeah.
And even the face to face stuff you can deal with. Like if somebody, like my daughter had problems at one point with some girls at school were picking on her, and I had dealt with bullies for a long time, so I knew what to do. And I told her every time they go to say something, before they even get the words out, just hold up your hand and go talk to the hand. And I told her, I said, interrupt them. I said, if they try to rebuke it, just go right back and say, talk to the hand. And she did it, and it worked. And that's what made me the most happiest in my life was knowing that what I went through as a kid, I could pass on and show my daughter how to deal with it. Because really, I mean, it was traumatic for her, and I felt bad for her, and I didn't want her to go through the same stuff I went through. So
but
I said, you know, when I was a kid, I tried to... Yeah, yeah.
When
I was a kid,
like you.
Because,
you know, I read Paul Stanley's book about how he got made fun of as a kid for not having, you know, one ear. And they got called him Stanley, the one-eyed monster. But then he went home and he got crap, too. And that was mine. You know, I went to school. I don't know how somebody just kind of picked me out from the beginning. You know, you're the one. And so because I had red hair, which wasn't popular then, and glasses as a little kid, then it was like you had red hair, glasses, and... Definitely, like,
every day
was like the kid from math going to school. And then if I went home, it was the same thing. In second grade, when nobody wanted to pick me to play on the team, the teacher said, well, nobody likes you, so you'll have to stay inside. which in a way was mean. It was mean, but then I thought, well, what the hell? I don't like those kids anyway, you know? But I think that's why, you know, I've got my book coming out, I told you about, called Memoirs of a Misanthrope. Some of the, and as Kenneth knows, I'm talking about some, it's a lot of it's essays about temp jobs I've had or things like that. But on the other hand, I can look back at it now, and it gives me that sort of participant observer thing. And I'm skeptical of people.
And a little bit of pride
yeah.
too.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and the kids
nowadays, they don't.
People talk about that neighborhood of Atlanta. They go, back when Gresham Park in Atlanta, back before it was bad. I go, what do you mean when it was bad? You know, because most of my friends here are black, and they'll say, before we moved in, I go, honey, well, I lived there when it was Lily White, and those were the meanest damn kids I ever saw. And to me, it was awful.
Yeah. It's so definitely awful. It's not associated with color or anything like that.
But, you know, they're all dead now. It's okay.
You know, you dance on their grave and you go,
woohoo!
I got something about miscommunication and, like, just not understanding. So this one time, I just moved to the United States.
Where'd you move from, Julian?
From Mexico, from pretty much, it's near Mexico City, the name of the state. And it's the equivalent of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, which is called Querétaro. So I move, and my mom and I, you know, I always had a really close relationship and with her. And I remember this one time, I don't know what I did. I was just in La La Land, just like, et cetera. But the teachers, they tried to say something to me. And I remember her giving me the body language of you're going to detention. And detention meant that you went on a bench and that you didn't get to play during recess and you just had to sit on this bench. And I didn't like it. And I tried to say no bench. And you can only imagine what I said. And that got me in so much trouble, and then they're trying to call my parents, and my parents are like, you know, they're like, hey, we're really challenged in English, too. And so I'm sitting here going, but I'm trying to stand up for myself, man.
Hey, well, at least it wasn't today's age, because you probably would have been arrested or something worse.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. I would have been in a heartbeat.
The other thing is behind it.
Yeah, for a while ago, I offered to work as an aide at my wife's school. She's a teacher for special ed education, and I worked with a lot of kids that had like language barriers and kids with disabilities and special needs, and it was really enlightening. But I could not imagine coming to a country and not knowing the language and having to just rip it. I mean, that's got to be tough, especially in the 70s, 80s, 90s, when they didn't really pay as much attention to that as they do now.
Yeah, it was interesting, man. And you know what was crazy? This is what was even crazier was the thought to me that all the Hispanic culture or the multicultural people didn't like me either because my parents and the teachers said, man, this kid's picking up English pretty fast. And I think that was just me survival instinct kicking in. But they were like, well, we can't have Julian in ESL because he's, like, making okay grades and he's understanding the language, so it's a waste for him to go to ESL. And so then the kids that had a hard time, and remember, I grew up in Mexico in an urban area, in the urban country, so I didn't, you know, I had a little bit of, like, you know, some kind of city sense, and I moved to the country, and some of the people that were moving in came from the rural Mexico, so they didn't like me because I wanted to hang out with everybody. I was just like, man, everyone's people. We're all people. But some people didn't like all the other races, and then the people that were Latinos didn't like me because I wasn't wearing a hat that said Old English with my last name on. And that was just the funniest thing to me. Now I'm just like, man, talk about, like, you don't like me and you don't like me. I'm like, come on, guys. Like, I can only have so much fun by myself.
You said it right there. The people that like other people, that's all we need. And hopefully we have more of those than those other types.
Man, I never understood racism until I understood that it was a concept, and I was like, oh, this is a thing. But
yeah.
Man, people are people, and the way I look at it, man, the way I look at the brass tacks is there's good people and there's bad people and there's no in between. There's you're either good
exactly.
person or you're
it's
a
not,
bad person.
It's not related to the color of one's skin or their sex or their preferences.
Totally.
It's not like Lord of the Rings where like you have all the dark people are bad and all the white people are good. It's not like that. That's not how it works.
Or
you know, that was a book
film.
Written
everybody
a long time ago.
Everybody is bad. And everybody the BMW
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. James Bond film.
Oh wait a minute, that might be true.
Telenovela. Telenovela, the bad people smoke. You know, on the Mexican telenovela.
Yeah.
There's bad people. I know the telenovela.
Yeah, the cleavage cam shows.
Everywhere.
And that's even its own thing too with the telenovelas. You know, I think that's BS that they, you know, they even try to, I think, promote the division of social classes in their agenda. Because, you know, in Latin America, either you're pretty loaded or you're like, you know, fighting real hard to make ends meet, or you're just dirt poor. And even then, I just think that's just BS, man. Like, I got, you know, I have a lot of really, really close Latin American friends, and I love them all to death, but there's some people that I know that just, they think they can treat people like they're there to serve them, and I've had to sit down and go, hey, man, like, if I pinch you, you're going to say, ouch. If I pinch that other person, they're going to say, ouch. What makes you think you're better? Please tell me, please, because I don't understand. And then they're like, I'm like, dude, you got no facts, man. You got nothing to stand by it. Cut that shit out. I'm speaking out of sheer passion, man, as an artist, and I've had enough. I can't see that anymore, man. And I think, you know, if you have a voice or the ability to see something or speak up, I think that's a test in its own.
That's what you do when you see somebody like doing stuff like that. You just speak out, and you let them know that you don't like it. And that, like I said, these kids nowadays, they don't have the face to face. So if you give it to them, they don't know how to handle it. You know.
You know, my husband and I feel blessed that we have friends from all walks of life. We feel like it makes our life better. Why would I want to spend all my time with people who look just like me, have the same experience as me? Everything was the same. You know, where would the fun and the interest come from? And my husband was born and raised in South Georgia, and he's so good. He's so wonderful at embracing cultures. He travels around the world all the time. We've been married for his job. He's the guy they send when they're about to lose a foreign customer because they got mad at somebody. They go, okay, go send Denton. Everybody loves him, you know, because what he does,
okay.
You know, he gets a book first. He says, okay, what are the polite things to say, and what are not the things you shouldn't say in that country? And then he just goes in
Absolutely.
With an open heart and an open mind, you know,
and there
you go. And I'm a lucky gal for that, you know. But you guys, I'm just so grateful to have you here. I feel like I've kept you so long, but I'm so grateful for you both. And
it's a good conversation.
Know,
I like it.
And I'll tell you one thing too. One thing. Telenovelas, you know, I've got a girlfriend from Guadalajara who was just like one of those women, and she used to help me with my Spanish, and I would say, well, I know what escúchame means. I learned that on telenovela. She goes, listen to me. I said, no. On telenovela, when you see two hot women in a room, Julian, please forgive me if this is racist, but if you see two hot women in a room on a telenovela, and one of them says escúchame, there's going to be some slapping, and it's going to be over a man.
Ooh,
I have no idea. I have to take notes here.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly. I got female cousins and my grandma that is just all about the telenovelas, and they know what's going on. They all talk, and they all go, ooh, what's going to happen next on the next episode? And then they talk about it all, so I can stand testament to there's women's fighting over for the girls, and then there's the guys that are acting douchey, and then there's the poor guy who's always trying to get the girl who's like,
yeah,
you know, in a higher class.
Formulaic. And he's like the male protagonist of somebody like Jorge Salinas or Juan Soler, and you think, well, I'll slap
mm-hmm.
him too, you know.
I put him in a douche for that guy. That's funny.
I get a then there was some good action too. Yeah.
Oh,
do you both speak Spanish?
I do. I speak it just as well as I do English. That was my first language, and I had the pleasure and the privilege of being able to start college in Mexico. So I did 3.5 years of international business as soon as I got done with high school. So that kind of popped me right up.
So
I'm able to speak it just as fluent.
So I took Spanish for 4 years, and I don't remember any of it other than two things. And only because my teacher told me in high school that if I had stumped her on a question that she would let me go for like a week or so. So let me try it on you. Ready? Tell me what these say. Tú tienes tu pelo with la con la carne de cerdo.
Tú tienes un pelo con la carne de cerdo? De cerdo?
Yeah.
You got hair of a pig?
All right. Can you say that one more time? Because there's different things that I'm hearing.
I may have the verb wrong. Tú piensas tu pelo con la carne de cerdo.
Tú piensas means you think. And then carne de cerdo
then I may
means...
be, I'm looking for comb.
Yeah.
You're looking for
comb. Comb.
Cocoon?
Comb your hair?
Peine.
Peine.
Close.
Mm-hmm. So I was like trying to tell her, you comb your hair with a pork chop. And the other one was, Go ahead.
Tú peinas tu pelo con carne de cerdo.
I was close. And this is not what
very
I was
close,
like.
Very close.
The other one was tu tienes hormigas en tu pantalones.
You got ants in your pants. Tienes
hormigas en
pantalones.
Guys are crazy.
That's all I remember from Spanish class.
I told Kenneth that I had Rudy Sarzo was on here a couple of months ago. I think he's going to come back soon. Rudy Sarzo, bass player for Quiet Riot, Blizzard of Oz. I think he's also plays with Blue Oyster Cult.
Oh, I met Quiet Riot.
You met Rudy?
If he was playing for Quiet Riot, you know what? No. I'm sorry. I didn't mean Quiet Riot. I meant Rah Rah Riot. I'm sorry.
Okay,
Wrong riot.
Prison Riot, not the Quiet Riot, not the school riot. Rudy Sarzo, but he's from Cuba. You know, his family's kind of had to just kind of slip on out like they were going on vacation and never go back. But he told me not to speak Spanish, that mine was no good, but I did it on the show, so I'm up to
that. Yeah, mine probably butchered the hell out of that, so I apologize.
You know what I say? You know what I say from now on when someone says, you know, I can't do that? I say, not with that attitude.
No, that's true. That's true.
The last teacher I had at Georgia State was from Chile, and I had to take that class twice, but everybody failed it, even if you were a native speaker. Because the first thing he would say was, I don't care who you are, where you're from, where you went to school, you're wrong, and I'm right. I don't care where you learned from.
Ooh.
And everybody in there was wrong. And even if somebody had a test, they go, why did you mark this wrong? Okay, Katie, tell me how you Colombianos say it. And apparently when he met his wife and his wife's family in Spain, he said, I've made sure that they knew that they spoke Spanish incorrectly as well. So I'm going, well, I'll bet they love to have you in the family. But, it didn't matter who you were. And one of my girlfriends, she was saying, my parents check my homework. I said, but your parents don't speak Spanish. She goes, yes, they do. I said, no, in his eyes, they speak Puerto Rican, not Spanish. In his mind, he was the only one that spoke it correctly. So that made me terrified to speak in front of people. But, you know, you just got to get out
and
practice.
I got a funny story about being in Spain and speaking Spanish and not understanding Spanish. And, I walk into this deli, and I go, oh, I bet you they have a sandwich. So I go, hey, can I get a sandwich? And this is all, the whole conversation is being done in Spanish, and they're looking at me like, huh? And I'm like, yeah, you know, a sandwich. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you know, like a sandwich. You know, there's bread, and there's like, you know, like what you have here, your ham and your mayonnaise. And they're like, oh, bocadillo. And I'm like, yeah. And so even...
that even translates to English, though. Like, when you go and, like, so around here, you have a sub, And if you run it through an oven, it's called a grinder. But if you go to the Midwest of the States and you ask for a grinder, no one has any idea what you're talking about. Well, I don't know about now, because I've asked many times. When I go back, I go, hey, can I get a grinder? They're like, a grinder? What the hell are you talking about?
Hey, hey, keep it clean. This is not that kind of place. Easy, easy.
Yeah.
Cool up.
But, I mean, that's what they call them around here.
Oh, wow.
So it's just odd, like, the differences between cultures, even, like, you know, next-door neighbors in the States. It's just odd.
Hey, like Julian is telling the teacher, no, bitch, I'm not going to go out and time out, you know, so still, no bench, no bench.
you know, with the kind of character that I feel like I remember, I feel like she might have deserved she didn't deserve that, but she might have deserved a stern, like, hey, lady, like, that's not fair. But I mean, I have nothing much respect for women, and I hear people now, they'll be like, oh, yeah, these bitches, and I don't care who it is. I mean, I've talked to executives, I've talked to people that are huge, and I go, hey, don't you ever call a woman by that name in my company again. And I suggest you don't do that, like, anywhere you go. And I do it in my stern.
Hey, bravo.
I grew up with two beautiful sisters, and women need to be valued. And I mean, there's a whole deep way you can get in this conversation. But when it comes to that, the brass tacks is, man, you treat a women with respect. Just, you know.
Yeah. Especially nowadays where guys, it seems like guys take it very lightly, slapping a woman. In my day, you never did that. I mean, if you did that, you'd be floored. Guys take that so lightly.
Man.
It's crazy. I mean, I have a daughter. If any guy did that to my daughter, I mean, that guy would wake up in the hospital. You know?
Oh, totally. Oh,
guys,
I totally understand.
I hate to do this, but speaking of being valued, you guys have valued me by giving me your time, and I feel like I'm not valuing you by keeping you here. But, Julian, you'll be back tomorrow night. Kenneth, do you think you'll
be
dropping it too?
Yeah, I'll try. Definitely. I'm dealing with this thing with the fish tanks. My wife actually is covering for me tonight, so it is a mess. I'm not going to lie.
Okay, so if you're still listening out there, Kenneth Kames' new book, Embers, a collection of dark fiction, and it's from Crystal Lake Publishing. And I'll have everywhere you see Madam Perry on Instagram or anywhere, I'll have links to everything of his, plus things to Julian. And Julian, for tomorrow night, I'm going to just go out with a little bit of dance line. I'll see you tomorrow night.
Touch to a magic potion. I feel like a king, no crown. I feel a little bit let down. Stay with me tonight. We'll kick off our clothes, lay back, I'll tickle your nose. Touch feet will.